and the voice of men's hoops, baseball, sideline reporter for football, and of course, host of Duck Insider. On Twitter, please use the handle at JoeyMacUO. Joey Mac, we last spoke on air about 6 weeks ago. So how are you, your wife, and all holding up during Our Lives Are Insane 2020?
Well, that's a good way to put it. I like that. We are good. Thank you for asking. My wife, bless her heart, is a teacher. So you can imagine that her life has been maybe a little crazier than everybody else's, trying to figure out the best way to teach a bunch of 7-year-olds through a computer, and now trying to just navigate the wild waters that are ahead of us. So we're doing good. And Steve, I know you'll like to hear this. I'm happy to report that the dog is 5 months old and 60 pounds, and he's sitting right here at my feet right now, being the best office mate that a radio guy could ask for, because so far he hasn't barked at me today, which it's been a lot of fun having him around, too.
Yeah, so fill the folks in. How old was the dog? What kind of dog, and what's his name?
His name is Henry. He is 3/4 black lab and a 1/4 golden retriever. We got him from a accidental litter on a hazelnut farm up in Harrisburg. And he is, we got him, let's see, when he was 7 weeks old. He is now just over 5 months old and a cool probably about 60, 65 pounds. So he's rather large.
When you combine Labby and Retriever, you're getting a lot of energy, and they are like eternal puppies. So it's awesome. I love hearing that. And you're not going to have a dull moment, my friend. I can tell you that much.
Well, you're right about that. It's been an adventure for sure, but it's been a good one. It's given us something to do with us being at home all the time. I think my wife and I would both be pretty sick of each other if we didn't have Henry to look after us. So it's been a nice distraction with everything going on.
It's awesome. So not knowing what the summer or autumn will bring, at least yesterday we learned Duck Insider will return. So give the folks the detail. And for some people who are new, where could they find it? And just for your sanity's sake, how stoked are you to just get back to business?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. I am excited to get back on. You know, we usually run Duck Insider from the second floor of the Casanova Center in the athletic department offices. And we usually run it from about the first week of August until whenever the last Duck sporting event is. Normally, that's the track and field championships in June. But when every spring event got canceled, and with just so much uncertainty around sports, and I wish there was maybe a little more certainty now, but so far there hasn't been a lot more. And with everything going on, we decided to take our summer break, if you will, a little bit earlier than normal. And so I know a lot of people were wondering, a few had reached out to me, like, so what's going to happen? Are you guys going to be able to come back with all the uncertainty? And we just decided, and I want to thank the U of O, and then also just everyone that I work with the Oregon Sports Network and Oregon Sports Properties, the sponsorship wing, for everything that we do and at the athletic department. They said, no, even though we have a lot of uncertainty, we still want you to come back and do the show. And so I said, well, that's great, because you're right, Steve. I mean, you can imagine, for someone like me who just lives and breathes this stuff every day, and then just not having an outlet and not getting to interact with fans as much as I'm accustomed to, it was weird. It was really weird. It's been, the longest time that I hadn't gone consistently behind a microphone until the last few months was probably when I was 17 years old. So it's been about a decade.
Wow.
So it was wild. It was definitely an adjustment for me. I kind of had a little bit of an identity crisis at one point. I looked at my wife and I said, so what else am I good at? And, you know, I think a lot of people have sort of had that thought with everything going on. So I'm pretty fortunate to be able to get back to a little bit of normalcy, even with some of the uncertainty, and really a lot of uncertainty around what's going to be an odd fall and the end of the summer, that's for sure.
Well, you became good at dog feeding, dog grooming, dog playing, and fetch. So
That's right. I'm happy to report that he does bring the ball back like the one-quarter retriever that he is. So that's a good start.
So, you know, during our talks over the years, we've pointed out that when it comes to women's basketball, you've actually missed a lot because, you know, the men are home, the women are away, and vice versa. But now the WNBA season starts in 10 days, and we can watch Sabrina and Ruthie and Satu, plus Maite from last year. And we know that there will be more eyes on it, and you'll know they're going to be talking about Oregon. So it just seems like kind of a pretty exciting prospect that's going to be starting in 10 days.
Well, you know, I thought that Rob Mosley put it really well when he reposted a picture on his Twitter at GoDucksMosley that was from the WNBA bubble, and it's Sabrina, Ruthie, and Satu all sitting around a table eating together. And, you know, Rob just put it so well, saying that if this doesn't just make you swell with pride as a Duck fan, then I don't know what will. And I agree with him. I mean, just seeing, I don't care what sport it is, when you have three athletes from one school that are all top 10 picks, top 8 picks. I mean, that's pretty amazing for any sport. And I just think it's pretty awesome to see the growth of that program. We saw it happen before our eyes with Kelly Graves here at Oregon and in Eugene, and now I think the entire nation taking notice of it is cool. And you're right, this is a huge opportunity for the WNBA. It's unfortunate. I'm sure you've hit on it today with what's going on with Elena Deladon. And,
yep.
You know, I think that the WNBA is unfortunately going to have a little bit of a black eye from that. And really, other than that, though, the WNBA was looking like a shining example of how you can handle sports in this environment and in this ever-changing climate. But the other side of it is, God, what an opportunity with not a lot of competition in the sports landscape right now to really show what the WNBA is. And, you know, I've always said that I defer to Terry Johns on anything related to women's basketball because he's A, watched so much of it, and B, he just absorbs himself in that fan base and in the knowledge of the game. And I remember he said to me, he went up and watched Maite Cazorla play last year up in Seattle when she was making her pro debut in her rookie season. And I remember he told me, like, it's a whole different level. You know, just everybody is athletic, and it's just such a great product with the WNBA. And that's a guy that's been watching collegiate basketball at Oregon and beyond for decades. And he still is just, you know, he just admires what that game looks like. So I'm interested to see what the popularity of the league looks like moving forward. And I think that it should get more and more popular. Women's basketball in general is just taking off, and I think Oregon's a big reason for that. And now maybe that's me looking at things through green and yellow lenses, but I think that we can all agree Sabrina Ionescu is a transcendent talent, and she's a transcendent person, meaning she's done a lot more than just been really good on a basketball floor, and I think people around the country have taken notice of that.
Yeah, I can't wait. Talking Ducks with Joey Mack, Duck Insider, returns 2 weeks from Monday. As for the men's basketball team, so since we last talked, another addition, they brought in the leading scorer from St. John's. What have we learned about LJ Figueroa and maybe what he brings to Dana Altman's table?
Well, LJ Figueroa is, I think, a big addition because, one, it's experience. I mean, Dane Altman, I think, would be the first to say that experience just goes such a long way in the men's college game. And I think that's the number one thing that he brings. But, two, it sounds to me like he brings a level of leadership that this team is really going to need every leader they can get. I mean, Peyton Pritchard, that was Peyton's team. The last, really, 3 years, it's been Peyton's team. And I think that a guy like Will Richardson can really step into that leadership role. But I think someone like Figueroa, who's done it already, that's going to go a long way. And what I really like with him, too, is his defense. I mean, I think that quietly, Oregon is building a very, very good defensive team. And I know a lot of people maybe don't remember the name Eric Williams. Eric Williams was a guy who transferred in last year from Duquesne, had to sit out. And I'll tell you what, Steve, I've maybe said this to you or on your show before. In practice, I thought Eric Williams was the best perimeter defender on the team. And I think a huge reason why Peyton Pritchard became such an effective driver and he really worked on his mid-range game was because Eric Williams was defending him so tough in practice all the time. And I just think those two guys together, Figueroa, Williams, Richardson, I mean, that defensive lineup for Oregon is going to be something impressive, not to mention the fact that Chris Duarte, one of the Pac-12's leading Steelers, is still around. And, you know, I think that Peyton's leaving, obviously, a huge void to fill. It's going to take multiple guys to fill that scoring void, that leadership void, and really the defense void, too. Peyton ended up being one of the better ball thieves in the Pac-12 right. last year as well. They're going to need every little bit of that they can get, and I think that Figueroa really adds to that defensive mindset that they're probably going to have heading into next year.
I want to move to football because we had the new offensive coordinator, Joe Moorhead, on a couple weeks ago, and we know he'll be evaluated based on what happens on the field. But seeing what he did at Penn State, the way they even ran the ball successfully at Mississippi State, he just seems like a great fit for what Coach Cristobal wants to do. Early impressions about what we might see from his offense.
Well, the few times that I was able to observe him working in spring practice before things got shut down, I'm impressed. I mean, look, I feel like every head coach or any individual that is elevated to a head coach at some point in their career, they just have that certain aura, confidence, just whatever you want to call it, attitude. And Joe Moorhead has that. I mean, you just feel that sort of gravitas to him. And you can even see that at practice. And I mean, every offense that he's ever coordinated has been pretty darn effective. You know, I think a lot of people point to those Penn State teams and be like, boy, that could be what Oregon could be. Now, he had guys like Trace McSorley. He had guys like Saquon Barkley on those
right.
teams. I mean, those are big-time players, but let's not forget that today C.J. Verdell, I should say, just got named to the Doak Walker watch list. And the Doak Walker watch list is obviously taking notice of the fact that he had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons. I mean, it's dark praise to say that he's going to end up being like Saquon Barkley, a bona fide first-rounder, top-five guy in the NFL. But, I mean, I think that tells you, though, the amount of talent that Oregon has on its roster. Well, I think a lot of people, including Coach Cristobal, are excited about what Coach Moorhead can do. I think that you might see a little bit more of that Coach Moorhead style that we've seen over the years, with not necessarily trickery, but I think just a lot of effective creativity to his offense.
A couple final thoughts for Joey Mack. When we talked last time, I mentioned last year the most publicized unit was the offensive line. This year with Holland, Breeze, Graham, it looks like it'll be the secondary. But man, with Kayvon Thibodeau, an All-American, Jordan Scott, and some other talent, how big do you think the defensive line under Coach Salavea could go?
I think the D-line is going to be really, really good. I mean, I think that Oregon's defense as a whole is going to be really, really good. And frankly, you know, you and I watch so much Duck football and have seen it that it's going to be interesting to see how many other people focus on the defensive line, right? Because everyone's talking about the secondary. You know, you've got your returning Rose Bowl MVP on the defensive side, that is, with Brady Breeze. You've got guys like Graham, Lenore. Everybody's really high on Mikel Wright. Everybody's really high on Javon Holland and Nick Pickett. I mean, rightfully so, right? But I think that the defensive line is subtly going to be really, really good. And Kayvon Thibodeau, I mean, just the way that he came on last year is something else. I mean, so he had, what, 7 sacks in the fourth quarter, which is, I think, the most, or tied at least for the most, of anybody in the NCAA. I mean, that's saying something. I mean, that's a primetime performer. That's a guy who was the number one recruit out of the state of California. A lot of services had him as the number one recruit overall in the class. And I thought you just saw that as the development continued for him last year. And, boy, he could be really good. I mean, he's a guy that could be an All-American as a sophomore. And the fact is that if he ends up being the quote-unquote anchor of that unit, I mean, there's a lot of guys that have played a lot of football on that unit. You mentioned Jordan Scott. I mean, I feel like Austin Value gets overlooked a lot. That's a guy who has been really, really effective in his career, and I think that he's a real anchor to that unit as well. I agree. I think that the defensive line is going to be really, really solid. And like I said, the funny thing is that there might not be a lot of people, at least outside of the immediate Oregon program and the immediate Oregon fan base, that think about them as an elite unit. But, That's going to be a pretty good squad.
And lastly, the offensive line. We know who the constant is in Penei Sewell. You know, Stephen Jones has played some ball, Alex Forsythe. But for a fan or myself who's trying to maybe brush up on some of the guys who have those big shoes to fill, who pops? I mean, who are some of the names in the mix, you think, for some big-time playing time?
Yeah, boy. I mean, replacing Shane Lemieux, Jake Hansen, Calvin Throckmorton, Dallas Warmack. I mean, those are some pretty big names to replace. That a lot of which were 4-year starters. You know, I guess it's nice that if you're going to be rebuilding that unit, you start with the Outland Trophy winner in Penei Sewell. I think that Penei Sewell's obviously going to play left tackle. The smart money would probably be that Alex Forsythe could play center, left guard, or right guard. He's really made himself a versatile guy in the same mold as Calvin Throckmorton. Alex is a smart kid. He watched the way that Calvin played those multiple positions. And I think that where Alex Forsythe ends up on the depth chart and at what position is really going to determine the way the rest of that unit looks. I think Stephen Jones is probably the starting right tackle. He's just that good. And, you know, I think that at one of the guard positions, at least, Malasala Mavaila'ulu is probably going to play one of those positions. They call him Sala because you just heard me do my best to pronounce his name. For good reason, they call him Sala. Sala is just a massive human being, and I think that he's going to end up being in that mix. Then it kind of gets interesting. You know, I've been thinking about it, and it's a guy maybe like TJ Bass who ends up starting at right guard. He's one of the top guys at the junior college ranks. He comes into Oregon. You figure he might be able to make an instant impact. Maybe it's a freshman like Jonathan Dennis that gets into it. I mean, the level of player that Coach Cristobal is recruiting in that position group is so high that it wouldn't surprise me if you get some freshmen that play like Penei Sewell did, like Stephen Jones did. And then there's a couple guys like Chris Randazzo, Dawson Jaramillo. They were both hurt last year, so they ended up at the end of the year being on the developmental squad. Jaramillo looked like at one point he was going to be the heir apparent at center to Jake Hansen, dealt with injury. Now he's going to snap a little bit as well. I think that there's a lot of names, and that's just some of them that can factor into that position group. But at the end of the day, it's Penei Sewell and then everybody else find a way to protect that quarterback.
I shut my microphone off. That seems like a bad idea for the host of a talk show. But anyway, great info, Joey. Look forward to 2 weeks from Monday, the return of Duck Insider on Twitter. It's at Joey Mack UO. You give regards to your wife, to your lab retriever, Henry. I always appreciate your time. And hopefully we'll talk soon and things will start to get back to normal, man. Look forward to it.
Yeah, I hope so, Steve. I hope that we're looking at some semblance of football, and my best to you, your family as well, and everybody listening. Hopefully we'll be able to talk about some live sports, and I'll otherwise be doing my best to fill some time every hour.
All right.
Hey, we stay connected to Ducks. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks a lot, Joey. Have a good one.